This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned in to the show that explores the narratives of historical landmarks and places in the Klang Valley. This month, we're going to focus our attention on Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa, its history and the role it should play in light of competition from other emerging parks. As we are surrounded more and more by concrete and glass buildings here in the city, parks become a great place to escape for relaxation and, as they say, be one with nature. We have many parks here in the city, but none is as historical and as influential as Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa. Once upon a time, the place was known as the park to be at in the city, so it's only natural that we chart its journey, especially now that it's closed for maintenance. Badan Warisan Malaysia's Elizabeth Cardosa joins me on the show to talk about this popular family hangout spot.
We actually need to start back a little bit. And if you know what is Jalan Tun Razak now, it used to be called Jalan Berkeliling, which was Circular Road, okay? And the reason why it was called Circular Road, and now it's the Inner Ring Road, right? I think it's also referred to as the Inner Ring Road. And, it is exactly that. It was the road, it was kind of almost the boundary of the city. The city didn't grow so much beyond that. And there were pockets, of course. There was Sentul, there was Gomba, you know, there was Pudu, there were Sungai Besi, there were these other areas. But the main city centre, if you want to call it, you know, was... And the boundary, which is the ring road that brought you around the city, was Circular Road. And this Circular Road, Jalan Pekeliling, on one side of it is the Hospital KL, you know, HKL now, the General Hospital. And there was this mining pool, abandoned, yeah, that was next opposite. And it was really to try to create a recreational space outside of the Lake Gardens, which was in the center of the city, to provide an alternative space. And it was open and it was recreational. What we see now as Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa grew out of that. So it was really just that as an alternative space. I think what is interesting is, you know, why do you put a Lake Gardens there? You know, which communities does it service? And it was really to develop this old mining pool, which was close to the hospital, because the hospital was there. What you see now as HKL is a massive, humongous hospital, which is the major, I suppose, general hospital in the country. The older buildings from the 1960s was a competition building, competition project, really. The maternity hospital is there. Now you see IJN next to it. Opposite, you see there is another hospital next to the Persatuan Sejarah building, Wisma Sejarah. There's the National Blood Bank next to it. And you have a lot of institutional buildings around it. But if I go back to the General Hospital, it used to be just, you know, timber buildings. And if you look at IMR, the Institute of Medical Research, the original blocks, there were, you know, again, timber, slightly raised off the ground, tropicalized, got veranda. You know, that was the nature of the hospital. And you would have this open piece of land opposite it, which was mining. And you don't want people to go into the mining pool, right? Because, you know, they can be quite dangerous. But you create a park around it, which is open space.
Yeah.
So it became like the second Lake Gardens.
The interesting thing about that park is that it's not surrounded by a residential area, right?
It is, actually. What is now Istana Negara, Istana Budaya, sorry, not Istana Negara, Istana Budaya, and Balai Seni Lukis Negara, those two buildings, and then there's a school next to it. What was behind it used to be, I remember, like almost kampung, smaller roads. It was houses that were built on, and I can't remember the name of the kampung, but it was a piece of land, and people built their houses, would rent, basically, TOL, you know, with temporary occupancy, and they would build their houses there. And so you didn't own the land, you owned the house. That whole kampung is gone. But if you look at the side, alongside, you have quite a few houses, bungalows, single-story or double-story houses in the whole area. So it was very residential in nature. but spread out. It wasn't high-rise, it wasn't dense population, which is why you have a school there, you know, catering to the neighborhood. Next to it, bounded on one side, if you look at Jalan Pahang, you have the Tawakal, you have the hospital, and then you have, you know, Jalan Pahang going up towards Sentul, obviously, you know, with the railway development and the railway yard, the railway depot, in what is now the YTL, Sentul West, yeah, and Sentul East and Sentul West, and all that kind of more new development. But Sentul itself was a small neighborhood, lots of schools, temples, churches, mosques, you know, things like that, catering to a multifarious, multinational, multi-ethnic population. On the edge of Titiwangsa is a gurdwara. If you're going the Titiwangsa side of the road, there is another gurdwara closer to Sentul in east, near the railway yard. And that railway depot, that gurdwara, caters to people of the Sikh religion, but people who were related to the railway community. The one on Titiwangsa side is related to Sikhs who were of the business community. So there were a lot of houses, and they still are there. But you don't think of it as sort of residential in a sense. You think of it as old residential. You know what I mean? Because it's more spread out. You know, people have gardens. So this was kind of like in the middle, but it was really a bit out of town because it was on the other side of Circular Road, if you know what I mean.
I've said earlier that Taman Tasik Titiwangsa was once regarded as the ultimate park for recreational or family activities. But is that still true, especially with many other newer parks emerging here in our city?
Well, there were two parks. You know, KLCC Park has kind of like eclipsed everything else because it's huge, its design obviously is extremely well kept. But Titiwangsa Park, Taman Titiwangsa, Tasik Titiwangsa, you still have the lake. People go to it, you know. I see people there all the time. And as you said, in the mornings and in the evenings, it's sort of a local. It's not for foreigners. It's not for tourists. It's actually really local. And it is the local community who enjoys it. It's not something that you go and it's very crowded and tak ada parking, you know what I mean? And you're fighting with people for, you know, there's lots of people and it's very... It's very, like, you can't walk around the park and enjoy yourself if you're a jogger or something like that. It's well kept, but it is not congested.
Mm. You've made the comparison with the KLCC Park, right? Mm-hmm. And that's privately owned, whereas Taman Tasik Titiwangsa, it belongs to the public, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the land status of the KLCC Park, but, you know, I mean, I think KLCC Holdings own it and they maintain it. And yes, it is a private entity in a sense, privately, but it is public. You know, it is open to the public, although they have opening hours, right? I think they shut down at a particular time, and if you go well after dark, you'd probably be told to leave. So it is much more policed in that sense, you know. This Taman Tasik Titiwangsa is a public park. It is owned by the city. You must, you know, admit that KLCC Park, the management, you know, have completely opened it to the public, and the public treat it like a public park because, you know, you're allowed to do whatever within constraints. I mean, obviously there are rules, but whatever it is open to the public. Nobody, you know, you don't have to go and sign in go through a boom, you know, to get in. You don't pay entry, right? Similarly, so, but of course, around the Titiwangsa Lake, you don't have the kind of upmarket tourist facilities that are there. You know, you don't have your shopping mall. You have your little, you have a warung. You have several warung that are around there. But there are not that many facilities, not like the KLCC Park. And you're not within easy reach of many facilities, except you are within very easy reach of, or the conversely, these institutions are in very easy reach of the park. which is Istana Budaya, the National Theatre, you know, Balai Seni Lukis, which is the National Art Gallery, the hospital, of course, across the road. The National Library is right by you. Again, a bit further down, but still there. The National Heart Bank, you know, the National Wisma Sejahtera. You have schools that are in the vicinity. It is actually very local. And when you drive around, if you do the circuit driving around the park, it's actually really pleasant. Got a lot of bongola. But, you know, which is fine, which is absolutely fine. And they have areas for buses and coaches to pull up, which is also good because then they're not, you know, on the road and blocking your path, which you kind of tend to find around other more populated public parks.
Mm. And that's quite interesting and quite essential in the sense that a park needs to also be able to evolve and able to cater to all kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. And for example, I think if I'm not mistaken, Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa has a jogging track, a biking track, mm-hmm. and now they have introduced like kayaking and even like horse riding activities there, right?
Yes.
So, how do these facilities factor into the park's popularity? Do you think that they are trying to just cater to an existing demand or is just trying to like introduce all these things so that the park can remain relevant?
You need to have facilities and different kinds of facilities to bring people in so that it caters. You know, there's an area for children. There is a little area, yeah, where you can go and, you know, ride little ponies. I think there's a skating area, if I'm not mistaken, as well. And jogging. What I see most popular seem to be the jogging. And people just sitting by the lake and enjoying it, taking pictures, you know, couples dating, you know, you kind of have that as well. And then there's the restaurant. There's a restaurant nearby the lake that serves Malaysian food that has a cultural show at night. And that seems to be the one part of the park that seems to cater for tourists specifically. Whereas the rest of the park, I feel, you know, even with these other kinds of activities, is really much more targeted at the local or the neighbourhood. However, I don't think that Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa has ever really promoted itself in the same way that, you know, it's not in your mind's eye. You know, you see as a visitor to KL, you will say, oh, you know, the Lake Gardens, right? Taman Botani Perdana. There are all these facilities, there are all these museums, there are all of these, you know, activities that I can do. Bird Park, some are privatized, some are public. National Archives, for example, you know, runs the Tun Razak Gallery, you know. I mean, you have all of these facilities there. So you have, you know, concerts and all of that. At Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa, although you have the National Art Gallery and the National Library and the National Theatre next door, I don't see a cross-fertilization. These are national institutions. So you don't see art in the public arena from the National Art Gallery. You see public, you know, they have sculptures at the National Art Gallery, around the National Art Gallery. I don't see them, you know, moving, let's say, you know, exporting anything or doing anything, creating any of that in Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa. Likewise with National Theatre, you know, when they have festivals, I remember, you know, like when they had drum festivals and things like that, things that could be done outdoors, it's done in the compound of the National Theatre of Istana Budaya. And so really, in some ways, it is a very underutilized and undercapitalized space, which maybe we could really think, you know, as citizens of Kuala Lumpur, think, you know, of ways to make it more vibrant in that sense, because there are these institutions that are literally national institutions that are next door to you. You know, so can you imagine how much more successful, I think, as a space, as a public space it could be if we were to do it. You do have family days, open days, and things like that happening there. And at one time, I think for about a year, year and a half or so, they had that Ferris wheel that was there. Do you remember? The Eye of Malaysia. Yeah, that's right. That was what it was called. That was there. And I think some of the residents in the area were just completely like not pleased, mainly because there was so much traffic congestion because of that. You know, it was there as an attraction. I don't know how long it lasted, but maybe a year and a half, maybe. I do remember it was there for some time. And that kind of was a one-time attraction, if Istana Budaya were to do something where you could bring your community together, the community in the neighborhood together, but you could also bring your performing arts out there. We want Malaysians to not just, you know, work, go home, you know, think about food only, right? We want us to have more entertainment, to be more cultured, to appreciate our culture better, you know, appreciate other people's cultures better. You have these kinds of institutions that if one could actually mobilize, and it would be the question of how and who and who's going to fund it, who's going to manage it, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we should really, I think, as the city develops and we're now running this diversity, KL Diversity Arts Festival, you know, if we want to celebrate our diversity, we don't have to do it in malls only. Mm. You know, we really should be looking at these public spaces.
Mm. Yeah, I've had other interviews with architects where we discuss public spaces, right? And one of the things that we always talk about is the idea of utilizing public spaces in an organic way, right? And as much as you can introduce all these mini attractions or even big attractions like the Eye of Malaysia, it's always good to sometimes utilize what's available, right? And I don't know, you can still do it, so it's not a missed opportunity yet, but it's interesting to think about that in that aspect, right?
I think, yeah, to promote that as an, you know, a notion. I mean, we are looking now, Kuala Lumpur has just announced that it's going to be looking at the next structure plan, because our current structure plan goes up to 2020, right? And, you know, as we develop ourselves as a city and we want to look at providing a better quality of life for our citizens, then we should look at how these public spaces contribute to better mental health and the arts and culture. We need that. We need to feed the soul, so to speak, not just to feed the physical body or, you know, we need to feed the mental health. We need to feed ourselves culturally, you know, and I think that there is such a big opportunity here to do something so much more, but not to over-landscape. No need, as you said, to add in the attraction. But in order to know what you should put in there, the dialogue, yeah, should be much more extensive. Mm. You know, you do need to have more people say, hey, this is what we want, you know. Let's just have that. And it's not, let's go and plant a tree and let's have a forest, but If we're interested in education, how do we educate people? How do we educate people about the environment? How do we use this? How do we educate people to behave responsibly toward their environment and to take it home with them and to transfer that, in, you know, that knowledge as a practice in their own lives? There are, like I said, some new developments, but you know they're not high-rises. Really, the density is reasonably low for the moment. On the edges, the density is very high, getting higher. But the plot ratios are, you know, going 6-7, you know, to the size of your plot. But, you know, in the city centre, it's like 8-9-10, you know, that kind of thing. But why don't we enjoy and why don't we keep much more of these big pockets for people to get to? Then the question of how do you get to it? You know, access is really by car. There is bus, but not so frequent. You know, the train is not yet there. So there needs to be more connectivity in that way. You know, while we build more and more offshoots and links to the Duke Highway, you know, we should make it more accessible through public transport and make it more diverse and inclusive, yeah?
Mm. In your line of work, how do you... Because, I mean, not to pigeonhole you, but in your line of work, you deal mainly with culture and heritage, right? So how do you view places like this, places like Taman Tan Sri Titi Wangsa?
Certainly, definitely, as part of the story of Kuala Lumpur. I mean, it's not a place that we ignore. I go to the area very often. I drive through it. I stop sometimes at the lake. I take people to the restaurant, you know. And certainly, I go to the institutions, the ones that I was talking about, those, you know, big national public institutions. And in terms of Banawarisan's work, while we look very specifically at, you know, cultural heritage, this is part of the history and the story of KL. It's part of KL's memory, you know. And so certainly it would be something that while we don't look at landscape in the way that a landscape architect would look at, we look at it as open space and we look at it as how relevant it is to the community around it. I mean, I read a couple of days ago in the newspapers that they're closing it or have closed it for maintenance. Now, I'm just wondering what kind of maintenance work. You know, what you're looking for is making it more disabled friendly, making it more friendly to older people, making it more friendly, you know, to allowing communities, you know, giving it a picnic ground, you know, if that's what we want, and finding a better way or offering more interpretation there. Because what's happening is, I don't know, for example, whether they've ever done an ecological survey of the area. What are the birds and the plants and the fish? And, you know, what is the flora and fauna of the area? How much of it is indigenous? How much of it is introduced? Can we improve it? Because, you know, in this day and age, when we're talking about Hazla, Heatla, you know, it has been so hot and now it's raining all the time, you know. And so you are looking at climate change, you know, it's a big issue, right? You know, and none of us can avoid it. So as Banawarisan, I mean, we're, you know, more and more consistently engaging with these bigger issues, not just the building and what happens in it, but really the building, what happens in it, who goes to it, where it's situated, what is it next to, what is it close to, what could it connect better with. And, you know, on a very small micro scale, you know, we've just completed an ecological survey of our plot, our site. And what we found there, you know, was quite amazing. I mean, it isn't that, you know, we have biawak and we have squirrels and we have tree shrews and we have snakes and we have butterflies and we have bats and we have lots of birds, different species of birds, and we have water wading birds, for example. There, it is not the fact that, oh, you have when we have musang and we have whatever, you know. It isn't that you have that. It is when you add everything up, the collective becomes important. The unique nature of it or what you celebrate is not the musang alone. You know, don't say, is it an endangered species or isn't it? You know, that's not it. The fact of the matter is when you add 1 + 1 + 1 + 1, you get your many millions, you know, that kind of thing. And it is that we see in our microcosm, in our little site, our little plot at number 2 Jalan Stoner. Imagine what there is at Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa. And it would be really interesting to find out. And if you can celebrate and if you can encourage that, you know, and not say, ayo, got monyet lah, you know, we don't want that. You know what I mean? Yes, there are certain types of monkeys which are more aggressive. You know, you don't want necessarily to encourage that. But there are ways of sort of discouraging and ways of encouraging. You know, we have bats in our, at Banawarisan. We have a colony of bats, a small colony of bats, which are a nursing colony, which means they have babies, which means that they feel safe if they're there. And it means that they have, you know, insects and plants and all of that, that they can feed on. You know, so what it tells us is about the health of our environment. And I think it would be really interesting if part of this upgrading is to look at the ecological health of that place, because it then contributes back to the ecological health of the whole neighborhood. If you had a clump of trees and there were eagles in that tree, or there were kites, you know, Brahmin kites living in those trees, and you didn't know and you cut those trees down, in order for you to develop, you need to have that understanding. And I think that as we grow more sophisticated, you know, Kuala Lumpur subscribes to the new urban agenda. This is all part of the new urban agenda. And Banawarisan, I think, is very invested in that.
You've been listening to I Love KL, and this week we chatted Taman Tasik Titi Wangsa's history with the help from Elizabeth Cardosa from Banawarisan Malaysia. And that marks the end of I Love KL's monthly special on historical buildings and places in the Klang Valley. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl or download our latest app via Google Play or the App Store. Also, don't forget to follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.